It's a little bit after 4 o'clock here on Katie and Kay, as you just heard. You're tuned to Everything Under the Sun, a little half-hour news segment with the Soper Sun, and we do have kind of a packed house today. I'm Will, editor of the Sun, and with me are two of our freelancers, Justin Patrick and Ken Pletcher. You guys can say hi if you're so inclined.
Hello.
Hello.
And also two folks that they've featured in recent editions, which would be Gina Stryker of Gina Cucina and Sean Van Horn of Ragged Mountain. No, sorry. Why am I having so much trouble with this? Independence Run and Hike manager over there. But both of those folks are, they're not just their roles at work. They're doing some other work that is near and dear to their heart in the community. So that's kind of the theme of today's show. Let's start real quick. Just with you guys, Ken and Justin. Justin, what was your, he's getting his headphones on. Justin, I assigned you to work with Sean. What was your first, you know, impression and inclination, and what did you find out when I first sort of threw you at that story?
Oh, I thought it was just one of these other crazy athletes doing some gnarly thing. Actually, after I got to know Sean and learned a little bit more about what he was doing, I was so impressed with the breadth and scope and the mission of what he was trying to accomplish. And for those of you who didn't read the article, Sean tried to summit as many feet as he could in a pair of skis in a 24-hour period at Buttermilk Ski Resort from, Sunday at 11 o'clock to Monday at 11 o'clock in order to raise funds for a local organization called Aspen Strong, which raises mental health awareness in this valley. And Sean did an amazing job. Congratulations. Just fell a few hundred feet short of the world, but is now has the second place title in North America.
And at a higher altitude, right?
Yeah, at a little over twice the altitude.
There you go. So, Sean, tell us about, you know, your desire to, you know, the effort in the first place and your reasons for doing it.
So the goal was to ski for 24 hours. And, I did have a competitive goal of trying to break the North American record. But a lot of the effort was definitely centered around trying to do my small part to eliminate some of the stigma surrounding mental illness, and to raise some money for Aspen Strong, which does a lot to raise awareness for mental health, and then also has some action steps to provide access to mental health services for those that aren't allowed to or aren't able to get them.
And why was that important for you?
It's pretty personal. I've struggled with mental health issues since I was very young. And it really ties into endurance sports for me. Endurance sports really brought me out of a pretty deep hole when I was younger. And I think a lot of people in this valley can really relate to that experience. I think a lot of us can also relate to the fact that while wild places and endurance feats can at times be an antidote to mental maladies, they really do not ultimately solve the issues, and that at some point we all need some help, and we all need to deal with those demons deeper down if we're going to find some solace and peace.
Makes sense to me. Justin, you did the story, at least for the Sun, as a preview, and then ended up reworking it for the Post Independent for yesterday's cover, which was kind of cool.
Yeah,
that's the perk of having freelancers in the mix. So one thing, did you have a chance to re-interview Sean for the PI story?
I gave Sean a break for that one, but I interviewed his wife.
Okay. So what might you have asked Sean had you had a chance to sort of follow up after the event about this experience? You've got him in front of you now. That's why.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, I casually uphill Buttermilk. It takes me about an hour and 15 minutes, and you're doing it in half the time, which is twice the speed, and then times 40 laps. Blows my mind. I don't understand how you can pull that off. What's it like training and executing that kind of a plan? And then, you know, what's it like at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning when it's just completely desolate, you're out there, it must be somewhat lonely, but I know you've got your support team out there, but how do you keep going?
So at one point, I didn't keep going. It got hard. I knew this was going to be tough. I knew there were going to be some lows. I hit a low that was lower than anything I've experienced in an endurance event. About halfway through, I decided to sit down because I hadn't sat down yet. And immediately when I sat down, I started hyperventilating. And I had told my wife before, do not let me lie down. Do not let me stop. No matter what, just keep me going. Even if I tell you to not let me, or to let me lie down. I started screaming and yelling, and she had to let me lie down because I was hyperventilating. I was sure I was going to have to go to the hospital. I was lying on her lap, just saying I'm sorry to everyone because I was just, I thought I was done. And through the help of my lovely wife, Kylie, and some dear friends in my support crew, I, after 40 minutes, was able to get back on my skis and keep going. But it was intense, and it was still really low for another 4 hours after that. And then I got a second wind and started crushing things around three or four in the morning, and the ascent times really started to drop. And then it got low again, and I wanted to stop, and I was bargaining with friends to let me ski back down and lie down and take a little break, and they wouldn't let me. And then I felt good again, and then I was done. But yeah, it got really low, and it got really intense. And as far as training goes, there's no way to prepare or train for those things, because it only happens in those deep, dark places halfway through events like that. And,
yeah, you know, when I was talking to Kylie, that's your wife's name for those who don't know, she explained this event to me and then said, you know, it's very analogous to what Aspen Strong is all about, which is you do hit those lows. We all have our peaks and our valleys, and being able to ask for help to get you out of those ruts and back out. It's such a simple metaphor, but it seems like it works perfectly.
I think it definitely works. Another thing that I kind of spoken to some friends about since, because the one thing that I kind of thought about after this is to not get too caught up in the result or in the event. Certainly one of the things that drives me to do these things is, you know, are the kind of these deep insecurities, and I'm looking for approval from the outside in a way, by doing these events. To tie into the mental health side of things, I think part of doing these things and coming out the other side is learning that even if I did stop in the middle of the night there, that it's okay to fail, that it's okay, that you are fine no matter what you do, no matter the ultimate outcome. It's great that I was able to push through it and able to put up a result that I was proud of and was able to lean on my friends. But I also really would have had to lean on those same people if I had to drop and didn't accomplish my goal and felt like hanging my head in shame. So I think that's kind of another message I wanted to get out there, because I think there's a little bit of irony sometimes with doing these crazy events for mental health. Because there's some sort of paradox there, but I also agree with your analogy there too.
Kylie's analogy.
Kylie's analogy. Thank you.
Do you see yourself giving us another shot sometime, or was that was it? That was once was enough.
I could see myself doing it again a couple of days later, to be honest, but there's definitely some other adventures I'd like to explore first.
All right. And so if folks are inspired by what you did and want to participate in supporting Aspen Strong, how do they do that? Where do they go?
So I have a GoFundMe page that you can find from any of the news articles written on my Facebook page. You can look at Aspen Strong's webpage. It's pretty easy to find. And yeah, I'd love to see some more support for those guys after the event.
I should point out Sean's raised over $8,500 at this point, or close to that, which is incredible. So congrats.
Thanks.
That's my perfect segue, I think, into fundraising. You are tuned, if you're just getting in, to KDNK, commercial free since 1983, listening to Everything Under the Sun on KDNK. And this is a listener-supported station. All of the DJs that you hear here would not be here without support of listeners like you. I hope that's not trademarked or something like that. But it is the middle of the membership drive. You can go to kdnk.org and and back the paper. And, you know, as a person who works at a nonprofit myself, I know how big a deal that is, how big a deal, whatever you're fundraising for, it's not just, the financial help. It's support. It's somebody, backing the cause that you believe in. And if that cause is, radio, all these voices shared all the time, not just for Carbondale, but around the Roaring Fork Valley and online around the world on KDNK.org, that's a pretty special thing. So when you're deciding whether to give, keep that in mind. Keep in mind that the people who are doing this every day, the people who are backing these things, it means something to them beyond just what the money looks like, or the amount of the donation. $5 can go a long way here at KDNK and elsewhere. So anyway, back to our show. Gina, let's catch up with you since we started off on the other side. Ken, give us the couple sentence rundown of what you knew going into this interview, and then we'll have Gina take it away.
Well, I knew about Gina kind of vicariously because I'm in a martial arts club that's located right near her office, and folks there are friends with her. It found out that she had not only had great products, but soups and other things, but also was involved with human trafficking here in this area. And I was just curious about that.
Okay. And so, Gina, how did that come to be? How did soup translate to combating human trafficking?
Well, it is not much of a long shot. All of our ingredients are trucked to us. All of our products are then trucked back out to our vendors. And in the United States, human trafficking happens along the highways. And the truckers are on the kind of on the front range of what's going on, and they see what's happening. So we decided to make that our cause for many reasons. I mean, I believe firmly that those of us who live in abundance, it's incumbent upon us to help the most vulnerable in our society. And these people that are being trafficked are incredibly vulnerable from every aspect. The average age is 14. And it's a devastating crime against humanity. And it's the largest growing criminal enterprise in the world. It's surpassed illegal arms sales, and it's well on its way to surpassing illegal drug sales. So it became a matter of passion for me. The more and more I dug into it, the more I understood what was going on in the world, I felt that it was kind of my destiny to dig in as much as I can and offer as much as I can. And anybody that was touching our products, I wanted to make certain that we were clean along all of our lines of any kind of trafficking. And that's what we do today still. I mean, I was on an hour phone call today with an organization, or it was yesterday, I guess, with Truckers Against Trafficking, and they're out there training the drivers, and we partner with them on quite a few of our projects.
I seem to recall that there was something maybe about mail delivery as well that was bringing back some positive results.
FedEx.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 2016, we won the Small Business Award. And with that, the following year, they asked me to serve on their entrepreneurial advisory board. And they flew me to Memphis in August of 2017. And my first ask of them was, all right, guys, you're truckers, you're drivers, you got to train your fleets on how to spot human trafficking. It's really important to do so. And so between myself and the team at Truckers Against Trafficking, we FedEx announced their partnership and their commitment to training the drivers January of 2018. And within 2 weeks, they saved one 14-year-old girl out of California. And so that was, I don't know how many lives have been saved since then, but I do know that we saved one little girl. And that, if I do nothing else, I'm really proud of that. And FedEx continues to be a strong advocate to combat human trafficking. They're an amazing organization. I'm really proud to be part of their family.
Are you up against that sort of same sense of wanting to do as much as you can, of balancing? We sort of tackled these questions of you want to do everything, you're not going to get there, you're not going to do everything you want. How do you balance the ideal and the sort of uphill battle of something so big?
What we chose to focus on was the United States. If you look at it globally, it is a huge global issue. In the United States alone, last year there were 250,000 to 300,000 victims of trafficking. And those are the numbers that we know. That's just what we know. We don't know what's undocumented. So because we're an American company, we have two ingredients that don't come from the United States. One is truffle oil, which you can only get out of Italy, and coconut, which you can only get out of Thailand. Everything else down to our jars are American made. So we got really focused on, okay, what can we do in the United States? What can we do from here? And that's what our focus is on right now, is how we can raise awareness. I mean, face it, we're a startup. We're 5 years old at best. There's not funds to give, but what we can do is we leverage our voices. We're not afraid to speak up and speak out to anybody and everyone who will listen. And every one of our partners has heard from me to the point where they're like, okay, Gina, we hear you, we'll do it. I mean, right now, you can go to Whole Foods and there's a little shelf docker that says, this is an organization that combats human trafficking. What are you going to do? You know. So, and if you go to our website, we have a mission page that's all about what you could do well to combat human trafficking, what you can do to spot it, who to call, questions to ask, what to look for. So we've got it very narrowed into the United States. What can we do in our own backyard first?
Can you give us some examples of how people could?
Yeah. A lot of the victims are tattooed. They'll have dollar signs tattooed on their necks or the name of their traffickers or a barcode sign. If they don't have a phone, if they don't have any control over their money, if they kind of don't know where they are, or they don't have you ask them, so when was the last time you saw your family? And they don't have an idea of that. Those are all clear signs that this person has been trafficked.
And what do you do if you notice those signs?
Go to my website, and there's a PDF you can download, and it tells you what to do. And it's free. You just download it, print it up, put it in your pocket. It's got the 1-800 national hotline that you call, and law enforcement will show up within 20 minutes of a call like that, because they move the kids and the people. It's not only children, but it is a lot of children. They move them very quickly. So there, you call the number and they'll be on the spot as quickly as possible.
And if you don't have the website, if you haven't taken that proactive approach, is calling law enforcement your best option?
Yeah, call 911. I mean, they suggest you do not engage the trafficker because it just brings harm to the victim.
Mm-hmm.
So call law enforcement. Just call 911. Say, hey, I just saw this. You need to get somebody out here now. And before they're gone, because they do. They're gone. Within 20 minutes, the kids are moved that quickly across the state lines.
All right. Well, thank you for what you're doing to tackle it, and hopefully that'll inspire some folks to take it up themselves.
Well,
We got about 5 minutes left, so real quick. First off, Ken, Justin, any other questions you'd like to ask these folks?
Well, I did want to. I wondered if you wanted to mention that you have. On your products, you have information as well, not only just at Whole Foods right now, and that you're working to try to get others to have it more prominently displayed, the information.
Yeah, that's true. If you buy a jar of our soup, the information's all in the back of our soup. Every jar of soup that we sell has information about how to combat human trafficking, where to call, you know, what to look for. So you can look at look at an empty jar of soup and say, okay, that's what I do. So it is in everything we do, every packaging. Every package of product that goes out, there is some form of acknowledgement and information towards combating human trafficking. And thank you for the opportunity to talk about it today. I really appreciate that.
Of course. You know, I think, Ken, I really appreciate you doing this. I think it was a great first story to to bring into the paper. Ken, if you don't know, has done a little proofing for us in the past, but yeah. This is his first proper story, and that's pretty cool. You started out with a really meaningful local angle, which I think is wonderful. And then Justin, you may be old hat, but it seems like you always bring something new to the table when you're doing these stories, and not every freelancer would just happened to be skinning up buttermilk and take a photo of the guy who was on his way up for, I don't know which lap it was when that picture, but
it was like lap 8, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. So
still feeling good at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, big smile on your face. You seem great.
But Justin, you might want to mention that you're working on a story, for next week.
Yeah, I am. There's a new Japanese restaurant in town called 450, then the degrees sign, so 450 degrees teppanyaki. And I just met the husband-wife duo that are running the place. They are super cute, came here from Fort Collins, just started. This is their first restaurant. It's awesome. It's really good food. They've got sushi. They've got teppanyaki, which is like Japanese grill food. So it's steak, chicken, shrimp, with very clean, minimal sauces that are just absolutely scrumptious. And they give you cotton candy when you're done.
Wow. That's it. I hope you got a picture of the cotton candy.
I did get a picture.
Okay. So read about that in next week's Soper Sun. We got about 2 minutes left. So Sean, Gina, anything else you'd like to add?
I just want to say that it takes me all of Sunday to hike buttermilk, Sean.
Yeah.
The skis are very light.
I don't think anyone's buying that that's just, oh, it was just easy. That seems like an unbelievable accomplishment. So congratulations to you both on your accomplishments and great causes. And stay tuned. KD&K is commercial-free since 1983, and up next, Ask the Vet is coming on live, and the membership drive continues. So if you just want to get done with being badgered and feel like you've done your part, you can go to KD&K.org. You can also, there's plenty of opportunities to support the causes that folks here in Carbondale are espousing. And thank you all for being here today. What a great crew.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.